Changes at the top. "It seems our letter writer may have been a friend after all," said Orso, "or at least an honest enemy. King Jappo confirmed it all." Glockter stared bright-eyed across his desk.
"Do you trust him?"
"Not a bit, but I believe him. He told me he had been invited to join a conspiracy aimed at bringing down the Union's government and offered Sapani in return. Numerous lords of the Open Council are involved, and at least one member of the Closed."
"Any names?"
"Only two." Orso pronounced them carefully, dropped into the silence like great stones dropped down a well. "Stour Nightfall and Leo Dan Brock." The Archlector closed his eyes. Crushing news, especially for him, but Orso could have sworn he saw a wry smile at the corner of the old Inquisitor's mouth.
"Body found floating by the docks," he murmured.
"Sorry?" Glockter took a sharp breath and snapped his eyes open.
"I must resign at once."
"Your Eminence, I need your advice more than ever."
"But we both know you cannot have it."
Glockter looked down at his white-gloved fist, clenched on the desktop.
"When you have clung to power as tightly as I have, it can be difficult to let go."
He spread his fingers out flat, the purple stone on his ring of office glittering.
"But the time has come. My son-in-law may very well be a traitor."
He curled his lips back from his ruined teeth.
"Even my daughter."
"But..."
"Superior Pike!"
shrieked Glockter so piercingly, Orso was obliged to narrow his eyes as Pike walked in, black coat flapping.
"For 25 years, Superior Pike has been my right hand," said Glockter. "No one has more experience or better judgment. No one understands so well what must be done. I suggest he serves as head of the Inquisition until you appoint a new Archlector."
Orso glanced up at Pike's melted mask of a face. He would have liked to choose someone else, someone softer, gentler, more just. He remembered the hanging of the prisoners at Valbeck, remembered Pike gazing up unfeelingly at Malma's gibbet. He had proved himself ruthless and remorseless, a man feared and hated by all the Crown's enemies and most of its friends, the very qualities a king needs in an Archlector.
"I see no reason not to make the appointment permanent," said Orso.
Perhaps Baez would have other ideas when he next visited, but for now the little people would have to make their own mistakes. Pike solemnly inclined his head.
"I serve and obey, Your Majesty."
Orso had never liked Glockter. He was not really a man it was possible to like, but he had come to respect him, to rely upon him even. And now, when Orso most needed support, he would be gone.
"What will you do?"
Glockter's brows went up, as though the question had never occurred before.
"Move to the country? Pin butterflies to a board? Argue with my wife? I always wanted to write a book about fencing."
"I will look forward to reading it," though in honesty, Orso had never been much of a reader. "I and the Union thank you for your distinguished service." Glockter gave a little snort of laughter.
"Only promise me one thing. Should you think me worthy of a statue on the Kingsway, have it stand up."
He waved a finger towards the practical lurking behind him, and the man turned his wheeled chair towards the door. Pike lowered his head.
"Your Eminence."
Glockter twisted the ring from his finger, weighed it in his hand a moment, then offered it to Pike.
"Your Eminence."
He glanced around his office one last time. The bare walls, the stark furniture, the heaps of unfinished paperwork.
"I wish you both the very best of luck."
And as simply as that, it was done. No ceremony, no medals, no grand speech, and no cheering crowds. from the pinnacle of power to a toothless old cripple in one brief conversation. The chair squeaked from the room, and the doors were shut upon Sandan Glokta. The era of old sticks was at an end. Archlector Pike stepped behind the desk. There was no chair now, of course, and so he stood, spreading his burned hands out on the leather top and frowning down at the ring on his finger. It seemed Glokta had found the one man even more monstrous than he as his replacement. But these were desperate times, and in desperate times one must sometimes call upon the services of monsters. "How shall we proceed, Your Majesty?" asked Pike. "Softly or otherwise?" Orso took a breath through his nose. "Could you send for Inquisitor Teufel? I have some ideas." Colonel Forrest and Corporal Tunney were waiting outside the House of Questions, Forrest typically standing to attention in a modest uniform, Tunney typically sprawling on a bench with a newsbill over his face. "Gentlemen," said Orso, "would you walk with me?" He felt an irrepressible need to stay busy, and the two old soldiers fell in on either side as he strode towards the palace, his retinue of Knights of the Body clattering after. For 20 years he could have done anything he wanted, and he had done nothing. With his future blindingly bright, surrounded by comfort and buoyed up by every privilege, getting out of bed had sometimes felt impossible. Now, beset by enemies and with the gloomiest of outlooks, he fizzed with energy. "How many men do we have now?" Forrest kept his voice low.
"Over 4,000, Your Majesty. Lot of 'em served with the Crown Prince's Division, keen to follow you again."
"Really?" Orso found that hard to believe.
"You never pretended to be a general yourself, but you gave 'em pride."
"That's rather moving. Thank you."
"Their gear was gathering dust in the Agrant cellars in any case. It only needed passing out again."
There was an irony. Savine had paid for the weapons they would fight her husband with.
"Where are you keeping them?"
"Some in disused barracks outside the city, some camped in woods and valleys, some still at their old jobs waiting for the call. But they can be gathered quickly."
Orso smiled, finally a sunny spot in the darkness.
"I knew you wouldn't let me down, General Forrest. I'm a colonel, Your Majesty."
"If the High King of the Union says a man's a general, who's to deny it? Consider yourself promoted."
"Look at that." Tunney gave Forrest a slovenly salute. "From enlisted man to general, and it only took you 40 years. You should get yourself a bigger hat."
Forrest pulled off his worn fur hat, revealing his sizable bald patch, and frowned down at it.
"What's wrong with my hat?"
"It's a fine, rugged, manly hat," said Orso. "Don't listen to him."
"Only looks a little bit like a quim," said Tunney.
Orso sternly shook his head.
Now, Corporal, any more insubordination and I'll promote you. I'd sooner face the hangman."
"Oh, I dare say we'll all be doing that." And Orso found he had actually delivered a carefree chuckle. They came out into the park, crunching down a gravel path, shadows stretching across the dew-glittering lawns from the early morning sun. Bloody hell, had he ever been up this early before? Everything was so crisp and clean and beautiful at this time of day. "It's looking likely that we'll have to fight in the not-too-distant future," and he slapped a hand down on Forrest's shoulder. "Can you gather more men?" The newly minted general glanced cautiously about, but there were few prying ears. Those without rebellions to crush were still in bed.
"I can, Your Majesty, if you can gather more money."
"Valentin Bulk put no limit on my credit. Recruit as many as we can arm, pick officers you trust and get them drilling, and secure whatever horses you can lay your hands on too. We may have to move quickly."
"Your Majesty."
Forrest made to put his hat on, then stopped.
"Bloody thing does look like a quim."
And he strode away.
"Valentin Bulk," Tunney slowly shook his head. "They've got a ruthless reputation."
A bank with a reputation for mercy is like a whore with a reputation for chastity. One fears they won't get the job done. No doubt our conspirators are watching me, though. Too many visits to my financiers might arouse suspicion, which is why you'll be my representative to the bank." Tunney was not an easy man to surprise, also found it rather gratifying when his jaw dropped.
"I'll be bloody what?"
"The only real skill a king needs is to pick the best men to serve him. You may like to paint yourself as the least dependable man in the Union, but I rather suspect it's all a front. When it comes to it, I'm not sure there's a man in the circle of the world I trust more."
Tunney stared at him. "We're all doomed."
The old bureaucrats of the closed council looked wild-haired and flustered, and who could blame them? They had been dragged from their beds to an unscheduled meeting in which a fully armoured knight of the body loomed behind each chair, even the empty chair of Baez down at the foot of the table. The White Chamber felt positively cramped by so much polished steel. Orso grimly steepled his fingers and frowned at each old face in turn. None of them gave any immediate sign of being a conspirator, but then conspirators rarely do. Not the good ones, anyway.
"My lords, I am sorry to call upon you so early," he said, "but we have grave issues to discuss."
"Where is Archlector Glockter?"
asked Gorodets, glancing nervously up at Gorst, who towered implacably at Orso's shoulder.
"I accepted his resignation just after dawn."
There was a collective gasp. Orso held out a hand to Pike, whose spotless white garments made his face look, if anything, more blighted and expressionless than his black ones had.
"Archlector Pike has taken charge of the Inquisition."
"Resigned?" whispered Hoff. "But why?"
"Because his son-in-law, Leonold Danbrock, Lord Governor of Angland, plans to rebel against the crown."
Brock's treachery left the room even more stunned than Glockter's resignation. Gorodets was tugging so hard at his beard, also worried he might tear his lower jaw off.
"Can we be sure?"
"I was informed anonymously, but on my trip to Sipani I met with King Jappo of Styria."
"You..."
Matt Stringer looked like he might swallow his tongue.
"This is an unprecedented breach of protocol."
"Treason takes precedence," grated out Pike.
"It had to be an informal meeting," said Orso, "off the books."
Most of the old men were looking thunderstruck, whether at the news of imminent rebellion or the discovery that Orso was capable of arranging something on his own, it was unclear.
"Jappo confirmed my worst fears. The young lion has gathered a considerable following of disaffected noblemen and means to invade Middleland."
"By the fates!" croaked Hoff.
"Worse still, he has enlisted the help of the King of the Northmen, Stour Nightfall."
"He plans to bring those savages onto Union soil?"
The Surveyor General's voice reached so high a pitch it was a wonder the windows did not shatter.
"Unthinkable!" whispered Hoff, slumping back in his chair. "Outrageous!" frothed Gorodets. "Send to the superior in Angland. Have Brock arrested. Have him bloody hanged."
"Brock is loved in Angland," said Pike in his emotionless drone. "We are despised. As long as he makes no move against us, he is beyond our reach."
"Your Majesty."
Brint leaned forward with his one fist clenched, the yellow stone on his ring glinting.
"The king's own are scattered to counter the threats of the breakers. Lord Marshal Ruxted is in Keln with most of the cavalry. We must concentrate our forces at once, so we are ready to meet any rebel threat and decisively crush it."
And he thumped the table and made several of the other old men jump.
"Agreed," said Orso, the first useful contribution. "Please send out the orders, Marshal Brint, to Ruxted and the rest. In the meantime, we must do everything possible to pull the noblemen's teeth."
"The open council stands in summer recess," said Hoff. "Some members are in the city still, but most will have repaired to their estates."
Gorodet swallowed.
Several sought dispensation to raise extra soldiers because of fears over the breakers. Very many extra soldiers in some cases.
An uneasy muttering swept the table. Brint clenched his fist even tighter. The High Consul glanced furtively at Gorst. Hoff dabbed at his sweaty forehead with the fur-trimmed sleeve of his gown. The whole stuffy little room reeked of panic and suspicion. By the fates, any one of the old bastards could have been the traitor.
"Go to your departments," said Orso, "and make preparations. I want our defences shored up. I want forces on high alert. I want anything disloyal rooted out."
He stood, planting his hands on the table.
"You are the only ones I can trust. My father's faithful advisers. My loyal, closed council. If we stay together, we will yet weather this storm."
Orso strode from the room, and with a screeching of chair legs, the old men struggled up after him.